In relation to the two issues that have been referred to, the killings in the Dunmanway abandoned area and then the later shooting of Admiral Somerville, I think one of the one of the great virtues of Meadha Ryan's book is her pinpointing precisely who were killed and what was their background. And all but two of the people killed in 1922 had been on a list of informers. The two others killed were the brother of one informer and the son of another. Now, the killings themselves were reprehensible because it was a truce period, and the killing of the relatives of informers was all the more reprehensible. And I knew that decades ago from my own mother, who came from Clonakilty, because the man whose son was killed was from Clonakilty. She knew the family. People knew he was an informer. And even if they thought he might have justly earned the bullet, they thought it was another disgrace that his son had been killed in his stead when he wasn't at home. But the other aspect that Meadha brings out of the book, and this is critical, the very fact that they had been killed undoubtedly raised sectarian tensions. And both for, if you like, the sense of responsibility of both the Republican movement in condemning the killings and the Protestant churches stating it wasn't part of the pattern, there would have been dangers. And one of the best fire brigade action taken to prevent it becoming sectarian was that taken by Tom Barry himself, who was in Dublin at the time. He wasn't in the vicinity. He rushed back to Cork, saw there were some Catholics trying to take advantage of the situation by intimidating some of their Catholic neighbours. Barry did indeed run people out of West Cork at that time. He ran out the Catholics who were intimidating their Protestant neighbours, and the Protestant neighbours thanked Barry for that. In relation to the second killing, the killing of Admiral Somerville, the names are mentioned in that book, Blood Dark Track, Tig Lynch and his sister, and Joe Collins. And I mention them because they're mentioned publicly in the book. Now, Joe Collins I knew personally. Joe Collins was an unbreakable fiend in every sense, with all the virtues that represents and all the vices that represents. He was a pure physical force man. But the last thing that Joe Collins ever had in his body was a sectarian bone, because Joe Collins came from Dunmanway, was a personal friend of Sam Maguire, and it was to Joe Collins that Sam Maguire confided that when he switched sides on the treaty, had initially supported it and then went against it, he was threatened by Cumann na n-Éire, who told him to shut up his mouth or he'd end up the mountains like Noel na Mass. And Maguire died a broken man. But the Republican movement, as represented in West Cork by the likes of Joe Collins, who foolishly went on to shoot Admiral Somerville in the mid-30s, that Republican movement defied the local Catholic priests by giving Maguire a Republican funeral in his own Protestant church. And that was the degree of their anti-sectarianism. They were anti-British, they were not anti-Protestant.
Just a brief question about your own background, to Father Murphy. You were born in England, is that right?
Yeah.
And your father's family came from Cork, and your mother's family then they came from England.
Oh no, O'Brien from Ringmoylan, Palaskenry.
And do you think that
my grandfather worked in the post office with Michael Collins at some time?
And then did this background have a lot of influence on your own interest in Irish history?
Inevitably. And hopefully not too badly. No. Well, obviously you're interested. Well, I tell you one thing though, I think, but brought up as London Irish, you see, and I got on with English people as well, London Irish. I was never brought up, and this might be a virtue, I was brought up as Irish, but not belonging to any Irish political party, which is presumably quite helpful. I think it is. If I may just read a little thing here. We've talked about this anti-Sinn Féin society, and I don't think people are fully aware of how it operated. But I was going to read this, but I've completed it now. There was another man, Hugh Martin, a journalist, another guy who was staying in this hotel. His book came out in February 1921, and I'll give you a bit out of it. Because he wrote what he took from the Irish Bulletin, My contention is, to answer Peter Hart, you need the Irish Bulletin, the sources for the Irish Bulletin, for the killings, casualties and everything, and what was happening in Ireland at the time, is badly, terribly neglected. This guy, Hugh Martin, was writing daily articles as a correspondent for a newspaper, was threatened with death by the auxiliaries in Tralee. Comes into Cork and he says, the police were making urgent inquiries for me by name at the Imperial Hotel, a sort of GHQ for special correspondents in the part of Ireland. He then writes his report and he gives an extract from the police journal, the weekly summary of 29th of October 1920, containing a statement by the Cork Anti-Sinn Féin Society of 11th of October 1920. This is the declaration. It's put in the police journal to be read by all police, black and tans auxiliaries. So the people going out, every week it came out. This is the decision, the notice. We, the Supreme Council of the Cork Circle, have reluctantly decided that if in the future any member of His Majesty's forces be murdered, two members of the Sinn Féin Party in County Cork will be killed. And in the event of a member of the Sinn Féin Party not being available, three sympathisers will be killed. That's the reality. That's what it was about. And Hugh Martin, he draws this conclusion. It is, I think, impossible to escape the conclusion that a government which itself prints and circulates among the police this weekly summary is giving its support to unlawful reprisals, both in the form of murder and the destruction of property. And I would suggest that, by not adverting to that, the Irish Bulletin highlighted the weekly summary. It's very hard to get. I've got some copies of it myself. I tracked them down, the weekly summary. But normally, even Michael Collins, writing to people, said, look, a policeman has got me a copy for one day. I've got to get it back in one day's time. They'll miss it. So it's very hard to get copies of it. But the Irish Bulletin got them occasionally and produced extracts from it. At the end of the day, the issue, I think, does concern sources. And I think Hart has produced these tables, statistics, and so on. And I think it's very urgent that people who are engaged in the debate get other statistics, not to try and get true statistics, and the best source to get them would be the Irish Bulletin.
I would like to compliment Dr. Murphy in this presentation. Peter Hart has many questions to answer. He has been challenged by Neil Ryan and others to name his sources, which he hasn't done so to date. So it's very obvious some of the research that Mita Ryan has gone into, she made them great detail. She interviewed people in the 1970s, I think, and later, when they were much younger then. Peter Hart claims to have interviewed survivors of Kilmichael, but there are great question marks over that. And my information is, and I'm quite prepared to say categorically here tonight, that he did not interview survivors of Kilmichael, even though he claims to. And I'm very concerned, and many other people, I'm not the only one, that this is the kind of history that's going to be taught to second level students and to third level students. And we have to counteract that at all costs. He cannot get away with that. He came in as a young man from Professor Fitzpatrick in Dublin. And he's following a pro-British agenda. There's no doubt about that. I have read it very, very carefully. And he's following a pro-British agenda. There's no doubt about that. I asked him a question in UCC when he gave a talk, when Peter Hart gave a talk in UCC a few years back now. And some of the people that were present then are here tonight as well. I asked him the question, if the British government had abided by the result of the 1918 general election, would you agree, I said to him, that it may not have been possible to have ambushes, battles like Crossbarry, Kilmichael, Upton, Solihull Beg, and many others. And he nodded in agreement. He nodded in agreement. He didn't disagree. Now, that's extraordinary. And since then, if I'm hearing, he seems to be backtracking on what he's been said. He said recently, I think, that other people had interviewed, other people had carried out interviews. I would like to put the question again directly, and someone might take the message to him. Who are the other people he's talking about? Interviewed people that took part in Kilmichael. He's backtracking now, and he's saying other people interview them. It's a very, very serious situation. Dr. Murphy here has done very interesting research, and we're very grateful to you and indebted to you for doing that. Because you have, Hart's cover has now been blown. The other point I would make, Kahini, but also Amtulam, Peter Hart fails to realize one central point in his whole argument, in all the writing he's done. He doesn't seem to realize that there was a war in progress during 1918-1921, that there was a war in progress between the Irish and the British. The British were in occupation of this country. The British government did not recognize the wishes of the people in 1918 general election. Therefore, the volunteers felt it necessary, they had no other option, but to take military action, to use physical force to drive the British out. Peter Hart doesn't address that problem at all in his writings.
The chairmen's are going to bring the meeting to a close, but I was just provoked or prompted by the last speaker and thank him for his comments. He mentioned David Fitzpatrick, who was the head of the Trinity History Workshop and under which Peter Hart began his studies, and Justo Gustin. But people here, I've said in defence of, and people may not be fully aware of the need for the defence, but in the Oxford History of Ireland, edited by Roy Foster, 1989, David Fitzpatrick wrote a chapter on Ireland since 1870, and a section of it was on the Revolution 1919 to 1922. This is what he wrote about Terence McSweeney. GHQ resisted demands for renewed urban insurrection by zealots such as Terence McSweeney, the bloodthirsty, if ineffectual, court commandant who achieved droll apotheosis as martyr and man of peace when he died on hunger strike in October 1920. I think that highlights the problem.
Just Copla Fogry and Ish, Sarah Creek, Nofra, the 84th anniversary of the Battle of Crossbarry will be commemorated at Crossbarry on Sunday, the 24th of April at 7 p.m. And then after that there'll be a dinner, Agasija Kjol, Munster Arms Hotel at 8:30 p.m. Now, Sinn Fogra, Matha Insan again, young. Another very important announcement, of course, is that the Brian here, the author, will be available after this meeting to sign copies of his book, Sinn Rud an a Hart, your father, you say. Agus. Now, is Stoke Shinnewill, now, Garamina Mahagul Galea, the Var Tachtan, so, thanks very much indeed for having come here. Yeah. And there's another announcement coming about me. And Garamina Mahagul Brian Murphy, right,
there's an event in the Grand Circle tomorrow night. A friend of ours, Jim O'Donnell from Cork, is doing a talk on Ónrú O'Sullivan with. He's translated some of his more risque material, and he'll be reciting it. So you're all very welcome. Well, I don't know if you're all fit in, so.